Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Gloucester artist Phoebe Potts was doing everything right. She went to Smith College. She recycled. She fought poverty in Guatemala. And she married a nice half-Jewish boy. See? Everything right. So why was it that she couldn't conceive a child? Not after five attempts at in vitro fertilization, five miscarriages, and 4 years of every kind of fertility procedure imaginable, including acupuncture and yoga, I might add. But still, no baby. Phoebe Potts calls it her infertility odyssey, and she's chronicled it in her new memoir, a graphic novel called Good Eggs. She joins us in the studio now. Phoebe Potts, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Well, in Massachusetts, I have to say, with its concentration of highly educated women in high-powered careers, it now leads the nation in the percentage of mothers who delay having children. More women here become mothers after the age of 35 than anywhere else. So for all of you out there, I imagine that Phoebe's story may be a familiar one to many women. So if you've struggled with infertility and wondered about good eggs and want to share your story, give us a call. How did you cope? And did humor help? And is infertility something that people can talk about openly? Or in this we can have it all era, is it still taboo? That is all today's talker on Radio Boston. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Phoebe, I have to ask you this thing. This question has been on my mind all day. Graphic novels they're a sophisticated storytelling device these days. But, you know, when you think about it, if you're not a frequent reader of graphic novels, you think, you know, Cloaked Avengers and
the X-Men.
You know, violence, the X-Men,
right.
Yeah, the Watchmen, whatever, things like that. So why take something as intimate and personal as your story of infertility and tell it through a graphic novel?
Well, I love to draw, and I love to tell stories, and I especially love to tell stories in which I'm the star. So I don't think of myself as an infertile person who had to get her story out. I think of myself as an artist who happened to be going through infertility. It never occurred to me to be quiet. It never occurs to me to be quiet about anything that's happening to me, especially when it's a bad thing or an annoying thing. I complain loudly and often, and if I can make it into a story, even better.
Well, the story is a really moving one. Early on, in the novels, you describe your struggle with fertility. We've described how you found you've done everything right.
Right.
And you portray yourself in the novel as the Hindu god Shiva sitting on a yoga ball. So can you describe that for us?
Sure. So I've just realized that once again, I'm not pregnant, and I walk by my doppelganger going down the street, except that she's got a post-yoga glow, and she's just had her soy non-fat latte vanilla shot extra hot, and she has a...
We order that around here all the time.
And she has a German-engineered stroller that comes in colors like swan and pomegranate and ox blood, and she's a consultant, and she works from home, and she has flex time. So I then imagine myself, like you said, Shiva on the yoga ball. And all my arms are holding these different things. So one is holding my Smith College diploma, and I'm saying, I went to Smith. Another arm has a therapist couch. I untangled my issues in therapy. Another is a fist. I worked for the poor. Another is a hand with my wedding ring. I married a nice, partially Jewish boy. I recycle. I vote. I eat my greens. I go to yoga. And then the next panel is a full page with me standing on the earth, screaming into the heavens. So where's my baby? Except it was more like, where's my baby? And then there's a little voice coming from another planet saying, well, it's not out here, lady.
Well, I mean, what was your, for you, in your own psyche, in your own spirit, what was your answer to that question? Where was your baby?
Well, I find that I am, going through fertility is an incredibly humbling process and reminded me that I am very much human. And even though it's very, humans seem to be procreating all the time, we seem to want to continue the race. Part of being human and part of being, you know, subject to your own biology is that not everybody gets to have a baby. I just thought because I was this nice East Coast Jewish lefty, knee-jerk liberal, overeducated, white girl from Brooklyn that you got a baby as part of your Crate and Barrel wedding registry. Like, they were just on, it was just part of the package.
You've even got a panel in there where you say, well, why can't I just go pick one up at a toddler at IKEA?
Exactly, because the other thing that we learned, I mean, I grew up in the feminist era, is not only is the world supposed to be my oyster if I work for it, but if that, you know, barring hard work, you can also buy anything you want. Mm. And so it came as a complete shock to not get this very basic thing done and to not do it right. And also, there was a great deal of shame associated with it, because you think you're supposed to be able to do anything through your hard work or with money. And if you can't make it happen yourself, then there must be something wrong with you. So I did go through a long period of feeling like damaged goods. Mm-hmm. Because it just seems so, it's the most basic thing we do as humans, and I couldn't do it.
Well, I have to say, as a woman, in reading your, or seeing the panels that you drew about this, I think maybe it's actually part of the strength of the graphic novel as a medium to tell this story, because I felt like I was right there experiencing what you were experiencing. For example, on page 18, you have some very courageous, I have to say, drawings about when you went through one of your miscarriages.
Oh, right. And I'm in a bathroom stall at a McDonald's.
Yeah, and you've got a panel here where there's like, it's during the holidays, so there's Christmas music playing, but you're in the bathroom stall and taking care of business, but you find that you're bleeding.
Right.
And just seeing that as a woman, it made my heart stop. So when you were having to draw these things and figure out how to tell these parts of your story, was that hard to want to actually be that honest and show images, even though they're drawn, of you having a miscarriage?
I think it's such a great question, because of course it's hard to relive this, especially because I wanted to be as honest as possible. I think secrets and shame are just so debilitating. And I actually think great stories come from being honest. And humor is rooted in truth. So the more honest and truthful I could be, the better a story I thought it would make. I do think there is some, credence to the fact that when you draw your story or tell your story, you're drawing and telling the story. So it was a way of having some control, too, over this lousy thing that happened to me. And if I could tell you and I could draw about it, it was a way of getting a handle on it.
Mm. We're talking to Phoebe Potts. She's author of the new graphic novel, Good Eggs. It's the story of her struggle and her family's struggle, your husband's as well, with their infertility. And it is a beautiful and courageous book. And we want to hear your stories as well. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Phoebe, you miscarried five times, four times?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. So I have to wonder, I mean, maybe this is a silly question, so forgive me, but after having gone through that many miscarriages, what in you made you want to keep trying and through infertility treatments?
Well, actually, the subsequent miscarriages were from after fertility treatments.
Okay.
So I would have an IVF cycle. I would be pregnant for 5 minutes or 3 weeks, and then I would miscarry. Most people probably are miscarrying and don't even know it half the time. But because you're so acutely aware of every day during an IVF cycle, I knew that, in fact, this is an unpregnancy.
So, I mean, you spent 4 years trying through fertility treatments. Tell us what that was like. That's your odyssey there.
Well, I think fertility treatments are structured insanity, because the timing is all very important, and you have to show up at the clinic at certain times, and you have to do certain things exactly at the right time and juice yourself up with Chinese hamster ovaries and inject yourself a million times. But you get on this thing where you do the injections and you have your follicles counted and you get really excited, and then you lay eggs like a goddamn salmon, like you have like 25 eggs, and then there's 10 embryos and it's going to be great, and then you find out that you're not pregnant. So it's this... it's so cliche, but the roller coaster is just full of hope and heartbreak.
Let's take a call. Mike is calling from Worcester. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mike.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious about how, in the graphic novel, you might represent sort of the dynamic and the stress between you and your partner. My wife and I went through very similar type of experience. We never miscarried, and in fact, we never made it to vitro, but... I do remember, you know, the stress of trying to have children, questions from friends and family, you know, thinking that, okay, the social clock that we should be having kids after being married a certain number of years and being in our 30s. You know, and then my wife and I's desire to have kids and not having them when she's pumping herself full of hormones, extremely emotional. We both are still engaged in our careers and the daily lives and everything like that. So I'm just curious how the sort of marriage component was represented in the graphic novel, too.
Mike, thanks for your call.
Well, Jeff comes off as a saint in my book, and that's not inaccurate. I think I can't speak for all couples, and I can imagine that the pressure is great going through this. And it was for us. I think what was maybe unique about our situation, I don't know, is that Jeff really separated himself from it in that he saw it as something that was happening to me. And because his part in it was fairly small, like he has to go into a room with a porn video and produce a sample, and he mostly took to tending to me and driving me back and forth from the clinic. And so he was able to be hugely supportive, and I show that in the book. I do want to say that I don't show a three-dimensional husband in this book as much as I guess I could have, because the book really isn't about Jeff. It's really my story, because I want to tell you about me.
But Phoebe, I mean, there's a part of the book where you sort of hint about the toll that this is all taking on Jeff, because so much of infertility treatment is about the woman.
Right.
And, you know, there's the moment in the latter half of the book where he says, you know, I want some of this to be about me, too.
Right. He does, at the end, he's just like, why isn't this working? And he does get really frustrated, which, of course, makes me burst into tears and say that I'm sorry. I guess you had mentioned talking to friends and sort of that social pressure, Mike, and I think for that, actually, it was Jeff's idea to really limit who we told. Because once you tell people you're going through infertility, you can't untell them. And they're always looking at your gut every time they see you after that. So it's really important to stick to the folks who you know can kind of keep it quiet and are just going to listen to you. And I have some very good friends who simply listened. They didn't say stupid things like, oh, it'll happen, and they didn't ride the wave with me on every cycle. And I think that was true for my husband as well, and that's really important.
Let's take another call. Holly is calling from Portland, Maine. Welcome to Radio Boston, Holly.
Thanks for taking my call. Phoebe, I'm very much looking forward to reading this book. I struggled with infertility for a number of years myself, and I'm wondering, is this book something that you think someone struggling with infertility today should read, or is it more for those of us that have sort of survived it?
Oh, it's such a good question, right? Because, like, when you're going through it, boy, someone can sneeze and you get offended. I hope so. I hope it is a book that a person going through it could read. But really, it's just I'm biased, but I just think it's a good story. I'm hoping that it kind of transcends just the issue of infertility. It's definitely also a chronicle of my patchy professional life. It's a Valentine to my husband. I mean, it's just a woman's story. And so, but I could see how, I mean, when I was going through this, I didn't want to read fertility memoirs because either the woman got her baby at the end and I was like, oh, she got her baby, or she didn't get her baby and I would be despondent. I am hoping that because it's a fresher take on that story, because it is a comic book memoir, that, like I said, it would sort of transcend the one-liner of the fertility story.
Phoebe, I have to ask, you said it is a woman's story, and that really comes through. There's a scene that you draw on page 21 here, where I believe you are at one of the... I think you're having one of your miscarriages.
Right.
And you know, you're encountering all these healthcare professionals. You're in the hospital, and someone's speaking to you, and they're telling you some difficult news. Is this someone's? I think it's Jeff actually saying, "Is this a new machine for the hospital?" And you say, "Man." And then a doctor comes and speaks with you and says something, but you say, "Man, man, man." So it's just like almost so that all that could be going through your mind, it seems, at that moment in time, was that everyone who's speaking to you because they're men, they can't relate to what's really happening to you.
Oh, it's so interesting you say it that way, because I usually just go, oh, man. So that's what I'm saying. But yeah. You see it as a gendered thing. I love that.
Oh, my God. So there I am, like, overreading.
But no, that's good. That's
super
amazing.
Super subtext here.
But you're right. Like, where does that expression come from?
Okay. Well, never mind. I was thinking I was going to, like, uncover some deep psychology about this. But it, better yet, I'm going to turn it back over to our callers. Maura is calling from Jamaica Plain. Welcome to Radio Boston, Maura.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I wanted to start by thanking Phoebe for putting this out there, because I'm an acupuncturist and I work with a lot of men and women around infertility. And for me, one of the most painful things to witness is the feelings of shame and the silence and the not being able to, or feeling like they can't talk about this at work or wherever. And, you know, so I'm glad the topic is out there. It's broached a little. Two things. What I notice for many women is the huge conflict around when their friends or their family or their sister-in-law is pregnant and calls them. Mm. And the pain and the divided heart that wants to be happy for them and that's feeling their own pain.
Right. Yes.
But just to throw out, because I'd like to hear your response, is also, I see men in huge pain around this also. And, you know, guys who consider themselves macho and, you know, manly everywhere else.
Right.
When, you know, their contribution is maybe not, you know, 100%, or it's in question or whatever. It's very, very painful.
Maura, let's get Phoebe to respond to that. Thank you so much for your call.
She's absolutely right. To begin with, I want to address the when your friends and family members have babies. I mean, people are like humping like bunnies around me and having millions of kids. And I would say that it's really painful, except that I like kids and For my close relationships with friends and family members, when they would have kids, I saw them as extensions of their happiness. I did notice that when some people got pregnant who I didn't know very well, that who were acquaintances, or that horrible Octomom and John and Kate Plus Eight, or somebody who the friendship was already feeling a strain even before it happened, those were the hardest pregnancies for me to take. I think this is one of these things that tries a friendship and tries a relationship. And the good part about that is you kind of see who are your closest, your nearest, and your dearest, and who are the people where, you know, it might be time to move on.
We're speaking with Phoebe Potts about her new graphic memoir, Good Eggs, about her struggle with infertility. And Phoebe, let me ask you, you did an interview in the Tablet magazine, and there's something that you said there that really caught my attention. You said that Virginia Woolf talks about how art is making your own world, and you can do as you like in it. I could make something out of my own body, my hands. That was profound for me in terms of writing and illustrating this graphic novel. And I was really struck by what you said, because you said you can make something out of it with your own body. And of course, pregnancy, the act of being pregnant, is making something, creating something, a woman out of her own body. So was this a way in which, you know, being able to be an artist and create something sort of bridged the gap that you couldn't cross physically by being pregnant?
Absolutely. I mean, it was absolutely. I think it, I mean, it, on one level, it's just the neuroses of needing to be in control. It allowed me to be in control of something I had very little control over. Because once you go over into fertility treatments, it's almost like you have very little to do with it. Jeff and I are both artists. And so the idea of having a baby would be this like amazing, magnificent collaboration, something we made. And so that was actually a very painful thing to give up. But yes, I think drawing is and being able to tell stories about it was a relief. Mm. It was a relief, and it took up a great huge part of my brain, and it was something I could create when I couldn't procreate.
Let's get one more call in here. Jennifer is calling from Cambridge. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I, like the author, struggled with infertility for 4 years and spent much of those 4 years doing exactly what you did, saying and screaming, where's my baby? Where's my baby? I deserve a baby too. And as I talk to you right now, I'm holding in my arms my five-month-old daughter, whom my husband and I adopted in August. And what's striking to me is how quickly I went from feeling like the unluckiest person in the world to feeling like the luckiest person in the world, because we found our baby. Mm-hmm. And all that time that we were trying to reproduce biologically, I feel like little Rose was sort of winging her way through the universe to us, and we were winging our way through the universe to her.
Oh, it's such a wonderfully redemptive story. We've been in the adoption process for 2 years, and so I'm so happy to hear that you have a Rose, because I'm beginning to feel like that I'm cursed and the universe is against me, because this is the 7th year of trying to grow our family, and like I said, the 2nd year of adoption. I'm finding adoption to be an expensive nightmare, and full of really lousy, evil people eager to take your money. But I love hearing stories like this, because it's very helpful for me to know there is a baby at the end of this.
Jennifer, was the adoption process as fraught and difficult for you as the process of trying to get infertility treatments?
I would say it wasn't as long as the infertility, the course of infertility treatments, but it was just as difficult emotionally, because like infertility treatment, it's a roller coaster. And you don't know, you know, when we were matched with our baby's birth parents, we didn't know for sure if it was, nothing in adoption is ever done until it's done. And so it was just day-to-day wondering if this was really going to happen. And even, you know, the adoption experience, even for us, is very bittersweet. There's a sense of loss for her birth parents and for her. Mm. And there's also a sense of, you know, gain and growth. And so it's emotionally just as difficult as infertility treatments. For us, I think we were quite lucky in that logistically it was actually much easier.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your call. Mm. Phoebe, I've just got one question left for you, on this adoption. The book Good Eggs has been so well received. Are you thinking about also applying your graphic novelist's pen to the odyssey of adoption?
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Yes. This has to be told. People need to know. And there's some really great stories in it.
Well, we're looking forward to reading them and seeing them and having you back when that happens.
Oh, I'll be here. Thank you.
And really, really good luck. Best of luck to both you and Jeff as well.
Thanks.
That's Phoebe Potts. She's author of the graphic memoir, Good Eggs. Coming up after the break, Bill Buckner in Brockton and the Shack in Sudbury. We talk sports with Only a Game's Bill Littlefield. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.